So, tell me about your problems. Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
Cast my guest this week for a little panel on shoujo manga and anime and how it's been doing lately. It's returning champion and marketing director at Vertical, Ed Chavez. Hey Ed, welcome back to the show.
Yo, how you doing?
I am doing okay. And our other guest is a newcomer to the show, but we got a lot of requests to have her on just for this particular discussion. It's Emily Snodgrass of shoujomanga.com. Hey Emily.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so with any genre discussion, the first thing that sends the train flying off the rails is when someone says, that's not really what shoujo is, and starts arguing what shoujo really is and how come this title isn't actually shoujo and this one isn't. And I mean, the semantics are so boring that I will literally fall asleep while recording. So I just kind of want to get your personal definition and how you feel the easiest way to tell if something is shoujo or not. And I guess I will start with Ed.
I don't know. I guess my personal definition would just be, you know, if content was originally targeted at young females. I don't know. I mean, you can get into really nitpicky details if you want to start picking things apart with like Jose or BL or Yuri or whatever. But I guess, you know, just as a general term, stories, whether they be anime or manga for a female audience is how I would just broadly define it.
Right. And Emily?
I look at it in a similar way. I tend to focus on, for anime, I tend to focus on the magazine that the manga it was based off ran in. So if the magazine is overwhelmingly girly, obviously aimed at female audience, I consider that anime to be shoujo. But then I also, using, again, also a broad definition, I'll also kind of lump in jose for older women. Under the shoujo heading, just for convenience sake, but it is, I do look at the magazine.
Right. Yeah. I'd have to agree with Emily. I mean, you know, coming from a, you know, publisher's perspective, that's possibly where I would look, you know, initially, but sometimes you might have certain circumstances where, you know, maybe that author is, you know, has long been doing shoujo, and you know, maybe this title isn't exactly entirely for a female audience, but it's, but you can definitely see those hooks, those elements there. So for the most part, you know, as long as you know, there is an intention to try to appeal to young women, I think, yeah, that works for me.
Yeah, true. It does get a little more confusing when there is no original manga, and it's, yeah, you know, or if, and there's no novel that it's based on either. If it's something, yeah, that's based, that was developed, like the manga and the anime were developed at the same time, that gets a little more confusing as well. So yeah, also what appears to be the intended audience hook as well in those situations.
I think it's just as difficult, maybe more difficult now, and we'll get into this a little later, to find what, like, pure examples of this is shoujo. Because, you know, the genres all get mashed together just to reach the broadest audience possible with a lot of things, most things. They include stuff for this audience and that audience and this audience, and hopefully they'll all show up and buy. And so it gets, you know, you don't see as much, like, this is pure a pure shoujo story, like, I'm going to come up with an example, and someone's going to go, well, that's not really pure shoujo, but, like, the first thing that pops into my mind is, like, maybe a Marmalade Boy, or, or, like, nice. Maybe Nana, just okay. Pure shoujo. That is shoujo 100%. And so, you know, yeah, I've heard a lot of people say, like, you look at the magazine that it ran in, and that's how you determine who it's for. But then some people argue, well, no, because the magazine sometimes runs stuff that's not 100% shoujo. It's just purity is not really a thing. But I think we can all say, like, as veterans of looking at this stuff, we know it when we see it. Like, I'm sure, Ed, there's little doubt in your mind when you're reading a shoujo title that it's shoujo. You don't have to sit there and mull over whether or not what it really is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I look at Boys Over Flowers, yeah, that's clearly shoujo to me. I hope there's nobody out there who would doubt that. But I mean, as I think we've all said before, I mean, there are nuances. You might run into something like, you know, an anime that just came out or is still running right now, like Number Six, and you might not necessarily think of that as a shoujo title, but it pretty much was tailored for that audience as a YA light novel in Japan. So, you know, fighting over the semantics, I think, is irrelevant once you actually start, like, looking at the content and checking out its hooks.
Right. Well, it sounds like we're all basically on the same page, so we don't have to have that discussion of what it really is and what it really isn't. But the first thing I wanted to – and this is important to me because – one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation is because I realized recently that shoujo anime was probably responsible in a large part for my early fandom. Because one of the first things I ever saw was Marmalade Boy, as I said. And it kind of blew my mind a little bit because shoujo is unique in that they do not make anything like it here in America in terms of animated product. There's nothing like shoujo anime. And so seeing something like Marmalade Boy that even deals with relationships in a you know, you could argue, maybe not realistic, but human way, and is dealing with something, there's no action or anything like that. It's just, you know, a little melodramatic, and there's romance in it. And it's kind of like it's one of the first, like, sort of gateway drugs into, oh, anime is really different from what we have in America. And shoujo is like, I never really hear that argument. I'm sure it gets made, but it is one of the truly different things that you see in anime that you do not see coming out of anywhere else. And so that, and I know Kimigori Orange Road is not, I don't know, right. Would you? It's not shoujo. I don't.
No.
Yeah. But it's got those romance elements in it, really strong. I mean, most of that show is the love triangle. And then there's those movies and OVAs that are all love triangle, and they dump all any semblance that it ever was about ESP or whatever the fuck. And that kind of blew my mind. It's like, oh man, this is just about these characters living their lives and dealing with their romantic feelings for each other. I've never seen anything like that before. So it really was a big gateway drug for me. And, you know, Marmalade Boy led to Hanayori Dango, led to, you know, other stuff. And I'm sort of curious, like, what, Emily, let's start with you on this. What was your first exposure to shoujo, anime, or manga, and how did, what sort of feelings, I guess, did you walk away from it with?
Well, for shoujo anime, I'd say my first exposure was probably maybe Here Is Greenwood, maybe. Really?
Wow.
Yeah, and of course that has, you know, male protagonists, so even then it's slightly different than normal shoujo. But along with Here Is Greenwood, there was a lot of, you know, the earlier magical girl shows, like, you know, Magical Emmy, Creamy Mommy. I joined an anime club at my university in the early 90s, and they were showing a wide selection of titles. So I was exposed to a lot of different things. And similar to what you said, I was immediately drawn to the shoujo series because it offered the types of stories that I couldn't really find very often in U.S., in Western, you know, in Western materials. That's kind of the same reason I was drawn to anime in the first place, and that as a whole, it offered a lot that I couldn't really find in Western cartoons. But in particular, series like early Magical Girl series, Marmalade Boy and Haniyori Dango, of course, were huge, are huge favorites of mine. A lot of things like Child's Toy, Kodocha, I really enjoyed a lot.
Yeah.
You know, things that get crazy, you know, or even the reverse harem idea of, you know, Fushigi Yugi. I liked all that kind of thing. So it wasn't really something that I saw a lot at the time. I think these days it's starting, we are actually able to find, you know, more of that type of story in the growth of the young adult fiction market as opposed to comics. But in terms of comics or stories in general in the early 90s in the U.S., I couldn't find anything else that was very similar.
Right. Ed, what about you?
I think for me, I ended up getting introduced to shoujo in the early 80s. So there were a number of, I guess the best way to describe them were fantastic sitcoms, like The Yukon Club by Ichijo Yukari, which is a great title just about a bunch of really, you know, super rich kids, parents who are extremely powerful. They're either, their parents are either super rich or, you know, politicos or heads of state or, you know, just big shots essentially, and they're able to do whatever they want because they've got money and wealth. Totally hilarious. Not as fantastical as, say, like Fushigi Yugi or anything like that, but just fantastic and, like, you know, how they can stretch out comedy with something that's so simple, something so mundane. And then, yeah, I think my first shoujo anime, exposed when I was living in Osaka as a child was Attack Wa V, classic shoujo volleyball manga. But, that theme song still resonates really deep in my heart. So I remember a few years ago there was like a live action anime of it. So I had to go back and collect the reprints of the manga and get that DVD. It's once again, I think that fantastic realism elements, obviously, sports are really tough and all that, but in that manga, you really have to work really hard and not just for the sports sake, but also for, whatever romance interests that you might have, whether it be that coach or that classmate of yours.
The obligatory rival girl with the curly ringlets who's rich. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we could talk about tropes in a little bit. Because it's certainly, like, it's not free from that disease. Like, shoujo, while I think it's a touch less recognizable than it is in, like, shonen, just because you're talking about plot twists and character types that are so common to even just, like, the soap opera genre that it's hard to point that out and say, like, God, they're doing this again. But, in terms of, like, what's tiresome about shoujo, and this will sort of lead to a discussion about the genre and how it currently exists, there are certain things about it that bother me nearly as much as, the tropes in shoujo and shonen anime and shonen manga, and, most exemplified easily by Fushigi Yugi, where you have a lead heroine who is not desirable whatsoever, but every character in the manga just is madly in love with this clumsy, selfish idiot who isn't particularly brave or worthwhile or anything. And I remember at the time, I have a recollection, I unfortunately can't directly name any characters off the top of my head aside from Miyaka, where this is not a strong heroine. This is not a leader. This is not a role model for anyone. I mean, she likes to eat and gets rescued a lot. And that's pretty much
her.
That's her whole character. Yeah. And so do you think, like, in shoujo, I think that the expectation is that these stories are going to have, maybe it's an unfair expectation, that these stories will have strong female characters in them, but don't often do. Nana does, I think, to an extent. I'm sure there are countless others out there, but by and large, shoujo is sort of as guilty of not exactly having role model characters, lead characters, strong female characters, and you might expect that from it. I don't know. What's your take on that, Emily?
Well, I don't know if shoujo is any, you know, more or less guilty of the weak female characters or expectations of strong female characters as shonen is for male characters. I mean, for shonen series, you often have the young, plucky, normal guy who works really hard and, you know, various powers up throughout the series. But then you also have the harem shows where the, you know, the lead guy is a schmuck who can't make up his mind, you know, and, you know, falls onto girls' chests all the time for no particular reason.
Right, yeah.
So, and who is absolutely not desirable in any realistic kind of way, in the same way that, you know, a girl might be in a shoujo manga. So, I mean, there are some strong heroines in shoujo manga. You know, I think in Boys Over Flowers, Haniori Dango, she, you know, the lead character there is a little tougher than normal.
Yeah, she has to, but that slightly. gets totally undermined, like, throughout.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I was very disappointed.
She starts off strong, and then she kind of, yeah, well, that's a lot of volumes.
Yeah, that's true.
You gotta sell magazines, so, but I don't think it's any more or less expected or achieved in shoujo versus shonen.
What do you think, Ed?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, what's funny is that, like, you would think that characters like this, whether it be in shonen or shoujo, you know, the readers would want to relate to people like this, but I don't necessarily think they entirely do. You know, in some ways, maybe they kind of, you know, want to have situations where, you know, they almost, you know, can either laugh at characters like this, feel pity for characters like this, completely disassociate themselves from anything that these characters are doing to turn these, you know, tales, whether it's, you know, Boys Over Flowers or, you know, Kadocha or whatever, into something completely, you know, fantastic. So it can be, you know, just, you know, a fantasy, some sort of crazy dream that they can just you know, come back to every 2 weeks, every month, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I think that's true. You don't necessarily, I mean, it's kind of weird to think that you can create a character that people will buy their story based on the fact that they are sort of feeling superior to that particular character.
Well, I mean, it's, why do you think shows like The Jersey Shore have such high ratings? It's so people can watch and feel superior.
Hey, I'm part of that. I am definitely part of that problem.
Tiny, tiny element of that, maybe.
Wow.
Sorry.
I never thought about it that way, but yeah. Yes, that's.
Would you look at them as role models?
No,
I hope not.
I try to avoid them as much as possible.
Exactly. So, you know.
No, they're horrible people. But that show, legitimately, these are horrible people whose lives have been ruined by this TV show. And watching that show, I religiously watch Jersey Shore, and that show is mostly about them struggling to tolerate each other for another season just to make the money. The looks on their faces, they hate themselves and this whole thing. Anyway, that's a distraction. but the other thing I kind of want to touch on here about shoujo, particularly in America, it didn't take off until manga took off. It really didn't. And, you know, I don't know what the statistics are on this, in that the audience for that might read more. I don't know if that's a stereotype or not. But shoujo anime was basically kind of toxic for a while, a long time, until, you know, I guess Tokyopop licensed and released Marmalade Boy. And we keep coming back to these two shows that Invis put out on Harry Dango.
Fruits Basket.
And Fruits Basket, right. So you had
Sailor Moon.
Right, and a lot of those were failures. Fruits Basket was kind of one of the first, like, big hits that they totally surpassed their expectations and did really well in sales. But that was a complete surprise. And then people started experimenting a little bit more and more and more with shoujo anime. Kadocha bombed. They didn't even release the whole thing. And after that, we're seeing less and less and less and less of it. And I'm curious, Ed, you know, you work in manga and have for years and years and years. What are the statistics? Like, how does that kind of break down? Obviously, it's much more successful in print than it is on tape, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess that's, you know, after I bring up the data on this, I'd like to turn this back to you and, you know, get your thoughts on the anime side, why the anime hasn't necessarily caught on as well. But I mean, statistically, one thing that you know, distributors and publishers have noticed for decades now is that women tend to read more to begin with, and so it's not unusual to, or it's not surprising to see that they would react the same way to a more graphic, more visual medium. I think what people weren't too sure about for the longest time was, you know, will women or girls want to read comics, because they just weren't going to comic book stores for the longest time. Yeah, I mean, you've long had, you know, female readers reading, you know, American superhero comics and the like. But I think there was a paradigm shift when Tokyopop started really, you know, pushing manga really heavily to retail stores. And, you know, that really turned things around, because, it, you know, as I'm sure, you know, the two of you have seen, you know, you have your manga cows that are just sitting in the alleys of Borders. Well, I guess they're no longer.
I call them hobotaku.
That's good. That's good. I like that.
just sitting around the aisles of BNN and Borders, just, you know, reading, you know, guys and gals, of course. But I mean, you wouldn't see that type of behavior at a, you know, at Green Apple and in LA, or, you know, Comicology or
no, but I did,
you know, Midtown Comics or something like that.
I saw it nonstop at book offs in Japan.
Yeah, definitely. People just flip through those 100 yen manga sections in Tokyo, and you would see the same thing happen, you know, in New York and in LA and San Francisco. And of course, you know, there were shoujo titles prior to Tokyopop. I mean, Fushigi Yugi is a great example. You know, Viz had Animerica Extra, which was almost entirely, you know, shoujo. And that didn't necessarily do very well at all. I mean, that was, no disrespect to the people at Viz, but I know, I'm pretty certain they can tell you that, you know, before Shoujo Beat, they were pretty much struggling to try to, you know, get any type of recognition for, you know, those type of titles. I mean, all they were selling prior to that were, you know, Rumiko Takahashi, Dragon Ball, and Evangelion, I guess. But yeah, being able to have titles like Cardcaptor Sakura and Fruits Basket and Karakano, and I mean, the list just kept on going for Tokyopop and the great properties that they brought over for females. I mean, it even ended up lending them an opportunity to experiment with Josei titles, which, you know, we haven't necessarily seen too many of since. So, I think there was an audience that was primed for it, maybe because of the Sailor Moon effect, you know, half a decade before. But I think all those additional variables really made it very easy for women to go out in mass to pick up these shoujo titles, you know, at the start of this century.
Yeah, and that just didn't quite materialize in the same way, you know, on the anime side. You have, and it's not like a tremendous amount of shoujo anime gets made, but not much of it gets licensed either. I mean, I think the last thing we saw, like the most recent thing, is Maid-sama, which I was surprised got licensed, and kind of surprised it even got made, because you really don't see that much shoujo anime coming out at all. Mm-hmm. Maybe one show, two shows a season.
Read up before this. I think they're in this season alone, like pure shoujo titles, anime titles, there might be two or three. You know, one of them might be Chibi Maruko-chan.
I think there's only one that immediately. Yeah, well, yeah, Precure.
Yeah,
I guess. I mean, I'm thinking about class, you know, more. I guess for whatever reason, Magical Girl doesn't go in that genre in my head, which is stupid because I know it's shoujo. But
it's like the most shoujo-y shoujo.
I know. I don't know why my head just doesn't put it there. But, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is that weird-ass show about the idol singers. And they all have
Idolmaster?
Crazy. No. They all have crazy eyes. It's not Nico Nico. I can't remember the name of it, but one comes to mind immediately, and we really don't see that much of it at all anymore. And I don't know if that's the same. Is that the same as it is with manga in Japan? Are they getting less and less shoujo manga there?
I don't think so. I mean, I admit I tend to follow shoujo manga more than shoujo anime. I pretty much only buy shoujo manga, and I only focus on Japanese releases. So I admit I'm not as familiar with the U.S. market in terms of what shoujo manga is being licensed here. But in terms of my personally trying to keep up with my spending habits, I don't see any decrease in how much I'm spending every week, every other week. And unfortunately, the number of bookshelves, bookcases, or the pace of which I need them is not decreasing any. So, but the quality of them might be not quite as good as in the past. I mean, I have noticed a lot of titles that are leaning to, well, if there was this period of a few years in the mid-late 2000s where there was an influx of exceptionally smutty, no plot shoujo manga. Granted, I like those, but still, there seemed to be an awful lot of them where, you know, and that's not even counting the ladies' comics, you know, the especially smutty ones. So I don't know if the quantity has gone down or, you know, quality versus quantity in that aspect, but that's just my observation so far.
Well, I don't know. Ed, you mentioned that you see it as kind of a dying genre.
Yeah, I don't think that the quantity has decreased as much either, but I totally agree with what Emily said. Maybe the genres might change. Maybe the quality might be changing. We haven't seen too many new shoujo magazines come online over the last few years. And the few that we have tend to be, they kind of tend to be in that teen love category, that more like clearly smutty for shoujo demographic. Not quite, it doesn't go all, you know, the content doesn't quite go all the way, and it's not as explicit as you might see in more Harlequin type of Jose titles, but magazines like Cheese.
Yes.
And
Shokomi,
which, you know, it was the quintessential shoujo manga. I mean, it's called shoujo comic, is pretty much now a smut magazine.
My favorite.
It's, and that's creeping down to things like Chao and and Chao is, you know, that was supposed to be for real, like, elementary school kids.
Yes.
So it is a little weird. Not necessarily being the most avid or rabid shoujo consumer, from a outside perspective, it does make me sad, because there was a time when there was a tremendous amount of diversity in shoujo. Obviously, having published classical shoujo artists in the past, I go back to Keiko Takamiya and Hagio and their contemporaries, and I don't see much of their work or their inspiration in people's work anymore. I don't see the sci-fi. I don't, like we saw a few decades ago with like Please Save My Earth. I don't see the drama that we saw in titles like Banana Fish. Banana Fish is a great title talking about diversity. Its cast is almost entirely male. You don't see the type of comedy that you would get in a property like From a Roy Girl with Love, or maybe you occasionally get your sports shoujo manga, but that was so important to like the growth of shoujo anime and shoujo manga, a few decades ago. So not seeing that as much is a little depressing. And actually, even reading critics' writings and other editors' writings from Japan, hearing how, you know, they have to, they don't necessarily have to follow like a checklist, but there are so many tropes that they need to continue to use because there isn't, there aren't too many magazines left. There aren't too many sources left. And, you know, they're trying to, the Japanese are trying to desperately hold on to that small readership that they have because a lot of the readers are, you know, reading things that trend a little older or, you know, things that trend to guys a little bit more. So, you know, they're really digging in. They're you know, they're digging in those, into those trenches to try to, you know, keep that pureness of shoujo. But, you know, that also doesn't necessarily, you know, invite new readers. It almost just makes it more of a niche, if anything.
Well, I've noticed that while there may not be as many magazines or new magazines, that the existing magazines are branching out a little bit in the use of cell phones.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of cell phone manga, and I buy the book, the volume, and then I realize, oh, this was originally published, you know, as a cell phone manga, Keitai manga instead. So that's, I've noticed that in the last couple of years as well.
Do you think that's just because of how rigid, like, traditional shoujo publishing is, and like cell phone or like online comics are, they allow for a lot more creativity and just freedom with storytelling? Or are you still seeing like the same reverse creep of quality with those titles?
I've noticed that the cell phone manga, while it does tend to do a lot of the same thing as the stuff I see in magazines, that the genres are a little bit different. Like, I'll see a book at the bookstore that is, for example, Boys Love, but it's being published under the heading, you know, under the imprint that I never see Boys Love published under before. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, oh, it was originally published as the cell phone, on the cell phone. So I kind of wonder if, you know, why, you know, why it wasn't, you know, when it was actually published in print form, why they didn't either create a new line for, you know, their own Boys Love line, or, you know, didn't publish under an existing line. You know, it's just, yeah, I don't know why, but I just thought that was kind of interesting as well. And I've seen some fantasy stories, some more fantasy stuff. Cool. Yeah.
Because I think the only shoujo, like, publications that are doing any fantasy anymore are, like, you know, Bonita and, I guess, Lala. Well, Hanatoyume still kind of does, I guess.
Hanatoyume, Asuka. Yeah. Asuka.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's because a little older. But yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me like it's, what's happening to the genre is that it is struggling to continue to be relevant and compete and sell just like everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact that it's being smutified in order to move copies just isn't surprising, because that's happening to a lot of anime and manga these days. It's sort of increasingly smutty, I think. I don't think that's just like me getting old. I think that's just like, it seems like it's a lot smuttier than it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's like a few years ago, I think, Emily, you pick up magazines also, right? So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, so, well, I can, yeah.
Yeah, so I think a few years ago you might have noticed there were a lot of pack-ins in shoujo manga, like even like way more than you would see in the past. And now it's, you know, and that was something that magazines, like not just manga magazines, were doing in Japan for a while, but just magazines in general were doing in Japan. But now we're also adding the smut on top of that. So it's real. I mean, they're really desperate to try to, you know, keep any type of readership.
Or adding the DVDs.
Oh, yeah, DVDs. Or like radio drama CDs.
I thought it was interesting to see like a bonus, you know, OAV of the anime, you know, packaged with the new volume of the manga. So it's an interesting idea, too. And that's actually, I mean, when you look at the list of anime series coming out every season, there have been several little half-hour shoujo specials that are, you know, where they try to condense, you know, 12 volumes into 30 minutes, but it's still, it's kind of, it's still neat as a fan of whatever that series is, to see that those characters animated, even if it's only for 30 minutes, and you keep, you know, the little hope that maybe they'll someday make a full series out of it. But that, I think those count as, you know, shoujo anime, even though they're not officially TV series.
Yeah, the more OVAs.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, since you're more of a manga person, Emily, but, like, when there is a new shoujo anime, what draws you to it? Like, will it, you know, will you watch the show if you've read the manga? Like, what draws you to it? And have you noticed anything changing in the landscape of shoujo anime, you know, in the last 10 years?
Well, if I've read the manga, then I still am all for checking out the anime. Like, for example, Kimi ni Todoke.
I love that series.
And it's, you know, did well enough to get 2 seasons. And it's also been licensed. And, yep. You know, that's one I'm totally stoked about. Skip Beat, you know, was another one, which unfortunately it was streaming here, but I don't think it has a DVD release, mm-hmm. but that's another one I was really excited to see animated. But, you know, Glass Mask. I think looking at the list of shoujo anime that's been made in the last few years and comparing that to what's actually been either licensed or streamed, I think we're actually doing pretty good. The only things that seem to be ignored are the, you know, excessively magical girl type series, you know, like Lil Pre, whatever the one with the, I think
Lil Pre,
yeah, you know, the horrifically CG animated Mecha Mote Incho.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that, you know, which is all kind of scary looking CG, but for other series, I think we're doing pretty good. We've got, like, even the Boys Love stuff's getting licensed. So I think the only things I see that have come out recently that I really would like to see licensed that haven't been, aside from Skip Beat, and I'd like a second season of that, would be Itazura na Kiss.
Classic.
Yes, but the anime is recent at least, so it's getting a nice manga release right now, but I'd like to see the anime for that.
So maybe like, it's not so much that it's on the decline, it's that it's changing like everything else is.
Yeah.
And not only that, like, saying, oh, we're getting less shoujo anime now is once again rose-colored glasses, or at least a skewed perspective, because when I got into anime, suddenly there's a world of shoujo to look at, and I have all this stuff, and then 15 years later, I'm like, hey, why isn't there more shoujo anime? Because I remember there used to be more of this, but no, that's a skewed perspective. I just remember there being a lot of it available to me all at once when I became an anime fan. So
I think that's it.
Maybe that's really what we're looking at here. It's not necessarily that anything is changing other than what is changing about the rest of the entertainment industry. So I guess, you know, maybe that's a good way to put it. We should, I guess, still be happy that we get, we get what we get. I mean, I really enjoyed Maid Summer. I thought it was a fun little romance. I haven't seen the whole thing, but I liked what I saw. So that reminded me of, like, oh, I used to really like shows like this. But I have to admit, like, my interest in shoujo romance has kind of dropped off a little bit. I think it's because a lot of it is so similar. And just my taste, you know, it's changed over the years for a large part. But obviously, Emily, that has not been the case for you.
No. I admit my tastes are not very exacting. I like almost everything. It has to be absolutely unforgivably awful for me to not like it, and I haven't really encountered any very much like that. So,
well, name one. Give us one that you think is just absolutely reprehensible.
Well, I can't think of an anime like that, but,
well, manga's fine.
Manga, I'm blanking out on the title, but I think I posted some images from it on Twitter recently, where it has a hero who literally rides a horse over a waterfall and catches the girl in mid-flight, you know, as she's falling over the waterfall. And in another chapter, he dangles from a helicopter he appears out of nowhere, dangling from a rope on a helicopter, and again catches this girl who keeps falling from high places.
That sounds pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, he jumps off a cliff and lands on a passing yacht.
Wow.
I mean, it was just so... I mean, it's awesomely bad, but I was just... I couldn't bring myself to buy Volume 2, even though I'm kind of morbidly curious to see what you fall from.
It would be great if that's literally... It would be awesome if that's literally all it was page after page of this guy rescuing or catching a girl in midair.
That's pretty much what it is. I mean, I think there's...
It's like the Old Spice dude manga or something.
Exactly. I think they're like 14 and they're married or something. It's been a while since I've actually read it. I just remember the main visual of him on the horse jumping over the waterfall on the horse, you know. And the helicopter was the first chapter, so you knew what you're getting into if you read the first chapter and you kept going after that. But yeah, I couldn't quite make it to Volume 2. But other than that, I love all the cliches. And my goal is to find, you know, one book that has as many cliches or tropes in one place that I can find. And yeah, that's like my goal in life, to find that eventually. And I've come close. There have been some that have, you know, the cross-dressing idol singer who's actually your teacher and also your stepfather, you know. I love those. So, yeah. I'm probably not the best person to ask in terms of critiquing historical importance or, you know, literary merit of shoujo manga.
Well, so before we get to Twitter here, I want to talk a little bit about, because Ed, you mentioned this before, and it was probably the biggest experiment for the genre that could have happened here, which was Shoujo Beat. Mm-hmm. Which obviously at this point, now we can look back and say, okay, failed experiment. Do you think that's just yet another thing where you can point to it and say, look, there's a market for it here, but not big enough to support something like that. And the people who buy shoujo manga generally buy it in volumes and don't really want the anthology. Do you think that's the lesson we sort of take away from Shoujo Beat?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think anthologies in general have been, you know, just a hard sell in North America to begin with. I mean, but let me go back on that. I think magazines now, period, are hard to sell anywhere. So, you know, whether it's Shoujo Beat or we're talking about like Newsweek magazine, you're going to have a hard time selling, you know, the circulation you were selling 5 years ago, you know, let alone, you know, a decade ago, if your magazine existed, you know, back before the internets were so, you know, so pervasive. So, I mean, why double dip on something like that unless you're going to get some crazy bonus, if you're going to get some amazing pack-in, if you're going to get, you know, like a full body, you know, a life-size new poster of Tama Hone or something like that in your magazine of Shoujo Beat, or, you know, one of the guys from Otomen. I mean, you can get the same type of content for a much more affordable price, and you can actually focus on the particular titles that you want to read instead of, you know, maybe only read two or three chapters in a particular, you know, issue. Cost effectively, it just doesn't work. Now, mind you, if there were, say, like a digital version of Shoujo Beat or something like that, I think that something like that could be pretty promising. You know, I wonder what what the numbers are for, you know, Yen Plus Online, which tends to skew a little, you know, a little more shoujo heavy, I guess. You know, obviously Yen Plus is no longer in print also, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see how long that continues for Yen Press, because I think it does, you know, anthologies do allow for people to, you know, test out new titles and experiment a little bit more, and doing that on a, you know, on a relatively more affordable, more easier on your bookshelf way, I think might seem a little more appealing to people nowadays. But yeah, that's something that I'm very curious about. But I don't necessarily think that just because Shoujo Beat is no longer being published, you know, as an anthology, and you can't run into it at you know, your 7-Eleven or your supermarket anymore, it doesn't mean that the genre is all of a sudden, or that whole sector of manga is all of a sudden meaningless. If anything, it's, you know, we should look at the imprint itself, and Viz's shonen shoujo line is possibly stronger than ever right now. So,
yeah,
that's a good sign.
That is true. All right. Well, okay, I think we can go ahead and get to Twitter here. I have a 22 sent us a couple of questions here. To everyone on the podcast, what's your favorite shoujo manga and mangaka? If you can pick something off the top of your head, I guess.
Gosh. That is... wow. That is really hard. For a very long time, I think my favorite was Boys Over Flowers, Hanayori Dango. Probably not anymore, for no particular reason, other than I haven't read it for a long time. But, gosh. I can't narrow it down. I just like so many.
Right. That's, yeah, I'd imagine that's difficult for you to just pick one. But this is an easy question for me. It's Nana and Aizawa. It's pretty easy. I don't read that much. I mean, if you ask me about anime, obviously my favorite anime of all time is Utena, so that's an easy choice for me. Yeah. But manga, I just don't read that much. But I did read a lot of Nana, and I really liked it. So that's the easy pickings for me. But Ed, what about you?
I guess mangaka would be Ichijou Ikari. You know, she's that 49er that I think everyone forgets was actually born in 1949, unlike some of the other 49ers. Favorite manga? You might be nitpicking here. Might not be shoujo to most, and actually, I don't think I ran into shoujo magazine, but Norame Cantabile is something I just fell in love with as soon as I started reading, and you know, I would really love to see that picked up again someday, though I don't necessarily know if there is, you know, an audience for quirky musical dramas.
Yeah, I like that one as well.
Wait, so you said that one isn't generally considered to be shoujo?
Split hairs by like magazines and the like, that's a Jose title, but in my heart, looking at all the, you know, flower patterned screen tone that is often behind Nodame when she freaks out about food or Chiaki, I'd call it a shoujo manga.
Right, yeah. Ava22 also asks, is there any way to market shoujo, especially action, adventure, or science fiction types, to appeal to shonen fans? Why would you waste your time, I guess, is sort of my question.
Yeah. That's really hard. I mean, it's tricky too, because first of all, not as much of it is being made anymore. But when Vertigo released Keiko Takamiya's works, you know, those fantasy sci-fi titles, yeah, they originally ran in shonen magazines. But one of the things that my predecessor tried to do was try to bring in you know, other type of readers to read Takamiya's works, and because there were different genres, you know, not your standard slice of life or romance. You know, the shoujo readers, the really hardcore, ended up gravitating to it because, you know, it was just something historical and something significant to them. Shonen readers are just traditional comic readers. You know, if they were looking for something something unique and, yeah, same thing, you know, something historical, they might give it a chance. But just should your Naruto fan or your Ranma fan, Inuyasha fan, it's just it doesn't have, it's just not the hooks aren't there for guys to gravitate to as well. You know, there's a reason why these stories were written for women and generally written by women. It might not necessarily be even worth it, to be honest.
I mean, to me, that question is, and I'm not, this is an app, this is the worst possible way I could phrase this because quality questions come up. But it's like, how do I get someone who really likes Batman to read Twilight? Like, why are you even bothering with that in the first place?
I would say not, in order to get them to check it out in the first place would be to not bash them over the head with, hey, it's a title for girls, but hey, you'll like it too.
Yeah.
I think you should just say, this is a story about this.
Yeah.
And just describe the story and the title and the author and not say, oh, and it's for girls.
Yeah.
Not that's a bad thing. I mean, I don't want it. I mean, it's not that saying that it's for girls is a bad thing. But when, for example, when you first watched Marmalade Boy, did you know going in that it was a title for girls or was just something that you had available? So I don't remember the marketing stuff as really shoujo early in the 90s as much as they do now.
You know, my exposure to Marmalade Boy was literally walking into my college anime club for the first time. I was in high school going to the college anime club, and they were promoting, they were showing the X-1999 movie, which everyone knows is just great. And literally, they had a schedule out, and it just listed a bunch of shows.
Exactly.
And I remember we sat down, we were laughing because one of them was Irresponsible Captain Tyler, and that just seemed sort of hilariously straightforward as a title to me. Like, I can remember going, "What is this crazy Japanese stuff?" And Marmalade Boy just started, and so it was just like thrown into the deep end of the pool. But watching it, I was like, "What is this? Is this a cartoon? Like, holy shit!" Are they brothers? What the? Yeah, right. But I didn't immediately categorize it. Like, my brain, I mean, at that point, I was getting ready to go into film school. I was already very open-minded in terms of, like, what kind of entertainment I wanted to consume. And it didn't bother me that it was clearly supposed to be aimed at women to me. Like, it was obvious, like, oh, this is kind of a soap opera thing generally aimed at women. I understood that, but that didn't deter me. I didn't have any, you know, specific rejection of that. But no, I don't think there wasn't anything about it. It wasn't marketed to me at all. It was just a name on a list, you know. So I think in the late 90s, that's how a lot of people discovered shoujo. Was just like, hey, check this out. And
exactly,
you watch it and you're like, oh, this is good. Like, I don't care who it's for, like, it's good. And you know, Sailor Moon became popular the same way. Like, it didn't matter who that show was for. Same with Cardcaptor Sakura. Didn't matter. It was huge among all genders, you know. And none of those were specifically, like, sold to us as, this is for girls, only girls should watch it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, or this is for girls, but maybe you'll like it too.
Yeah, right, that's not a good way to sell pretty much anyone on anything.
Though I don't necessarily think Cardcaptor Sakura was the best example, since some studio tried to turn it into something for boys, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm talking about in the fan sub days, like, like before Cardcaptors, Jesus. God. Saw a VHS of that on the shelf the other day, and a little part of me was just like, God.
Okay. Forcibly turning a shoujo series into a shonen. Painful.
Yeah, all right. Zero Intelligence asks, why is it that most shoujo manga seem to use the same or similar art style, and why do they use so much screen tone?
I actually don't really think that the whole genre uses a similar art style.
Well, he's not saying everything. It's just you can point to a boatload of shoujo manga that all look the same, just like you can do that with shonen. I mean, it's not...
Yeah. I think it's the magazines that use a similar art style. Like if you pick up Margaret, the magazine, and you pick up Nakayoshi, I think the styles between the two are very different, as in the eyes take up the entire face in Nakayoshi, and in Margaret, they're slightly different. But within each magazine, the styles are fairly consistent. So that was my thought on that. That so if I see something, I can probably pick out, you know, what magazine it probably ran in. And I think that maybe artists, when they're deciding to draw a shoujo manga and aiming for whatever magazine they want to submit their work to, maybe, perhaps, total speculation, might try tailoring their artwork towards whatever it is they're wanting to be published in.
Right, so they have a house style, and they know that's what sells, and they want that to be in their magazine. Okay.
Yeah, it's just my thought, but that's just total speculation. I don't know for sure.
Ed, any thoughts?
I think Emily is right on the mark with that. If you read an issue of Princess, that art style's been the same since the 70s. it all looks like From America with Love or Swan.
I could pick that out too.
Regarding the screen tone, I don't necessarily think they use screen tone any more or less than Shonen. What they might use more is mampu, which are visual effects, and you might see a lot more sparkles, a lot more flowers, a lot more stars in the background, and that is actually a result of the 49ers, and they actually, to try to set themselves apart from male artists, decided to change paneling in the way manga flows and the pacing and tone of manga. So by making each panel a little more, I guess, alive by having all these effects be added to each panel, so you no longer have to read the dialogue to feel emotion, to understand what are in these characters' thoughts. So that's something that's not exclusive to shoujo anymore, but something that has been consistent since late 60s, early 70s from the 49ers.
Or perhaps it also depends on how many assistants the mangaka has. you've got three assistants who can sit there and tone for you, then you're going to end up with more tone, and as opposed to the struggling newbie who's trying to do it all in their one room.
Huffle. With their mom helping them out or something.
Yeah, you'll have more, solid white background panels.
Okay. From Sewing Rose 11, she asks, is there a market for older pre-90s shoujo in America? If so, who's the demographic? And is that mainly a manga or an anime market? I will say, if that exists at all, manga only. No way in hell is anyone going to touch any pre-90s shoujo anime. That is not going
to
happen.
I wish. There's so much I really want to see.
Oh, no shit.
But seriously, I think there might be some people who would want to pick up Rose of Versailles.
Well,
right?
That is literally the only thing that comes to mind is Rose of Versailles.
Right.
There's so many. I want to see some of the, aside from the Magical Girl stuff, which of course they don't even license the new Magical Girl stuff. Licensing the old stuff, Magical Emmy in particular. I would like to see something like Aishite Knight from the author of Itazo and a Kiss, or Tokimeki Tonight.
Oh yeah.
Some of those types, and even all the Blonde Orphans with Birth Secret series, like there's Candy Candy and Honey Honey and Lady, a lot of these titles, Lady Lady, Hello Lady Lynn, all those Blonde Orphans with Birth Secrets, or even more recent ones similar to that, Ashita no Naja is another series I'd really love. But I'm totally in that market, and I would love for it to happen, but I seriously doubt everyone else is in agreement. Aren't they having enough problems with the 2005 version of Glass Mask?
Yeah, which didn't sell well enough for them to continue.
Yeah, that's about as close as we get to a classic shoujo release here.
Yeah, I don't think so. Some enterprising publisher might decide, let's take a chance, but it's not like the history of this stuff would really give you like really compelling sales figures.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, you'd sell to like You can sell to Emily.
The one person.
She needs to get everything.
Yes.
And you'd possibly sell to Ed Sizemore.
Right. 15 bloggers will buy it.
Exactly. And you'd have, you know, you'd have academics and universities and things like that pick them up. But, I mean, I don't even know how well Fantagraphics's, you know, Moto Hagio release from last year did. You know, I hope it did relatively well, but you know, just on our part, you know, the few classical shoujo titles that we've done, I mean, I won't say that sales were horrible, but they could have been better. You know, and we'll be releasing Princess Knight, so
yes.
Let's see how that goes. You know, I hope it does as well as Tezuka's other releases. I actually have pretty high hopes for that title, but it is a little bit of a risk for us too. So, you know, just because we do one, or like any manga publisher does a classical, you know, pre-90s title, you know, maybe once, you might see one a year from here on out. And I think people should be pretty happy about that, because there really just isn't, you know, like a huge, huge audience for this stuff in English, and honestly, not even too much anymore in Japanese.
Well, you just got to manage your expectations, and there is an audience for it. You have to make sure they know you're putting it out,
yep.
And you got to keep those expectations nice and low. And you'll be okay.
Just realistic.
Yeah.
We're releasing one volume.
And yeah. to wit, the next question is, any remote chance anyone will ever rescue from Eureka with love? Or digitally distribute the CMX translations? Maybe those will pop up on J-Manga or something.
Yeah, I hope that they do pop up on J-Manga, because, you know, that's a hilarious series. You know, what I would be very curious about would be, you know, if that series does get distributed online, you know, will they continue to translate it after the volumes that you know, CMX worked on? Because, you know, I do know those sales numbers, because I worked for CMX for a while, and they were not very strong. So you know, even if you're just buying the book online for, I don't know, hopefully at an affordable price, I wonder if there'll be enough people to afford even a translation of that.
Can you give us even like a hint of like maybe like one volume of Eroica with Love, like how many units?
Well, like volume one wouldn't be fair, because, you know, every volume one does a lot better than, you know, subsequent volumes. But you know, Eroica's, They would hit triple digits, but I wouldn't say that that they would get up, you know, even halfway to get to four digits. So
yowza. Yeah, well,
so, you know,
yikes.
But that's just the way you know, manga as a whole, and this is like a completely other episode, Zach, but manga numbers, and I'm sure anime numbers, can be pretty depressing when you look at them.
Oh,
like
for
a,
sure.
From an
no,
overall
yeah.
picture. So,
absolutely. I've scrolled through Video Scan on more than one occasion and just laughed and laughed.
So, you know, From Eureka with Love is not the worst selling manga series that's ever been published, but it definitely... CMX was giving people a service by continuing it as long as it ran, because it wasn't worth the editing or the translating, at least not from what I saw.
Right. Okay. So not probably best chance, maybe on J-Manga.
Yeah.
Okay. NeoCloud asks, here's a question only a nerd would wonder about. like any of these others are not the same way. Do y'all consider genres like magical girl or boys love to be shoujo? Why or why not? I guess I already know Emily's answer to that.
I consider both of them to be shoujo, just under the aimed towards female, regardless of age. I mean,
yeah.
I guess you could, if you want to get technical, I guess the hardcore boys love would be, I guess, josei, really, if it's aimed at older women, but I do consider those to be subcategories of the overall shoujo umbrella. Mm. That's just me.
Ed?
Yeah, no, I'd completely agree. I mean, you know, both of them fall under that umbrella for me. I mean, even if you have like a title like Magica Madoka, which I don't think was explicitly trying to target, you know, female viewers, I think there's still enough there for women to, you know, to understand the principles behind that and maybe even enjoy it. Maybe even enjoy it better than guys do because they might know a little bit more of the history of magical girl stories.
See, that's, you know, we were talking about this a little earlier, the disconnect on magical girls for me. And that's just because the genre seems to have sort of slowly transformed into something aimed at dudes these days anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone talks about Precure, and the only fans of that franchise that I have ever seen are men. And I know it's aimed at little girls. I know it airs in the morning.
Yeah, really, really little girls. Yeah, it's aimed at really old dudes.
Right, yeah. No, I get it. And, like, Sailor Moon, the big thing everyone would talk about back in the 90s was, like, oh, it's actually more popular with guys because they have short skirts and shit like that. And nowadays we're seeing a lot. Like, I would... Madoka Magica is an otaku show, like, through and through. It's definitely aimed at otaku, and I would say male otaku. You know, and then there was that absolutely hideous... Twinkle Paradise Sparkle, whatever the fuck it was, that made me want to kill myself. Clearly aimed at men, you know. And a lot of the magical girl stuff seems to become an otaku genre.
Started, I think, personally with Nanoha.
Right. That was the other one I was going to mention. Nanoha. That's kind of where that started a little bit, but there were hints of it in Sailor Moon. And, you know, over the years, there was that shitty Mao Chan thing that Ken Akamatsu shat out one year. That was clearly aimed at male otaku. It was a magical girl show. It had airs of being satire, but clearly was not actually satire. So, you know, yeah, I think it's kind of become an otaku genre more than like a shoujo thing. And that's, I guess that's why my brain just kind of automatically puts it in its own place. And I don't think of it as like, oh, this is aimed at girls or little girls. Cause especially if you look at it and it's on at 1:30 in the morning, like that's how you can tell.
Yeah. I think the time slot is a big deciding factor. I mean, I think historically I usually consider it to be for girls, but then you have stuff like, I guess I'd consider Cutie Honey as a magical girl
that's
in a sense, but she's
one of the very first magical girl stories.
Yeah. And it's, I don't think that was exactly aimed at women either. So I think I'm maybe on a show-by-show basis, but yeah, I think over in recent years, it has been, the guys have been kind of co-opting the magical girl genre.
Yeah, I think so. All right, AngelX03 says, why do some shoujo series toy with faux yuri relationships between two girls? Why is this the norm for girls? I'm not sure I fully understand this. Is that a big thing in shoujo now? The fake yuri thing. I don't know.
I haven't really noticed it, but
this person trying to reference Maria-sama ga miteru? I think
maybe
that might be yuri. Maybe it's not the yuri this person likes. I don't.
Well, Eric is not here, so we don't know.
Yeah, we might be the wrong people to ask.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was the norm for girls. I mean, I know, like, the whole, like, fake lesbian thing is a college thing, but other than that, like, I don't know what he means.
I think it might be a historical shoujo thing in the sense there's, like, in Oni-sama or even Utena, there's the girl who is looked up to by all the other girls, you know, the tomboyish girl. But that isn't a specific, well, Utena, I guess, more than, but the yuri relationship between girls seems kind of like a historic shoujo trope, but it's not one I see a lot. I only see it recently if it's something that's specifically trying to reference older shoujo series, so I don't know. I don't read the right titles.
Well, it sounds like you consume more of this stuff than anyone else here, so I'll go with your word on this.
I still don't understand what this person means by faux yuri.
Faux yuri.
I mean, like, if you look at the Utena TV series, it's a little faux yuri.
Yeah.
The movie takes it all the way, but the TV series certainly does not. It just hints at a romance.
She still wants a boyfriend.
Yeah. It's but the movie erases all doubt. Anyway, all right. Our friend and yours, Ed Sizemore. For the love of God, why can't we get Rose of Versailles? And I have my understanding of this question has always been the author is a lunatic, and that's why we're never going to get it.
That's a pretty good answer, I guess. I've actually tried to not for Vertical, because Vertical has asked in the past, and before I joined the company, when that didn't work out. But I actually was working with another very large comic publisher to try to get that brought over, and even they couldn't accommodate Ikeda. So I don't know what can be done to get that series over here. I mean, she does go to Marseille ever so often, so she might have something for the French. Maybe if the manga was set in North America, it'd be a little different, but sadly it's not.
Okay, Anime Fangirl asks, how does the anime market target females, i.e. what accommodations do they make, etc.? I don't really know. They seem to target them the same way they target men, by pandering to them very heavily.
Yes.
That's how you market to anybody, yeah, really. That's generally what marketing is how hard can you pander to these people? You know, lots of handsome dudes and sparkles and shit like that.
Uta no Prince Sama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about, right. Yeah.
Singing guys. Or even one that I don't think was released here, but that Miracle Train show where all the guys are trains. Yeah. I thought that was pandering a bit. But of course they didn't release that here. But if they did, it would totally...
It streamed.
Yeah.
We streamed on ANN, I think. All right. Kagero Niki asks... These are two slightly lengthy questions, but I'll start with the first one. Like many girls who got an anime and manga in the late 90s and early 2000s, my gateway show was Sailor Moon, which led me to other shoujo titles like Fushigi Yugi, Cardcaptor Sakura. Nowadays, there don't seem to be as many gateway shoujo titles, at least not in the States. Are there any relatively new titles you would recommend to get someone interested in shoujo? Do you think the Sailor Moon re-release, I guess she's talking about the manga, will attract new fans? Ed, you want to take that one first?
Sure. Let me answer the second half first. I sure hope it does. From what I hear from my friends at Random House, you know, Sailor Moon sounds like it's going to be huge in the next couple of weeks when it launches. So I think even Mike Tools on a previous ANN cast was saying that they're having like opening night parties at some comic shops. So I hope it sure attracts new readers as much as, you know, you're old school fans. Don't know. Let's see, what would I recommend as a gateway manga right now? I don't know. I guess Kimi ni Todoke would be great. I really think that's a very sweet title. A little more old school in its nature. Just good drama, good characters, good storytelling. Not too reliant on sexy tropes or any extremely fantastic concepts. It's just characters just talking and hanging out and learning about each other. I think it's great. I think it's something that I've been wanting to read, you know, for years now. I'm glad it's being translated.
Yeah, no cross dressing idol singers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I can't really think of a huge title, either anime or manga, but I don't see what's wrong with using previous ones if the person hasn't had any exposure anyway. You could still show someone an older title that, you know, still show them Cardcaptor Sakura. I don't think it may be out of print in some
places. You have it, yeah.
Yeah, if you have it. But if I don't see age as something that would keep you from using a previous gateway. I mean, you still, in terms of shonen series, I mean, they're still selling Dragon Ball out the wazoo. Mm. And so I think that's probably still used in some cases as a gateway to shonen stuff. And that's certainly not new. They just keep recycling with like Kai and all that. But so I don't see what would be wrong with using an existing show, but I can't really think of anything recently released that is huge other than maybe Kimi ni Todoke, both the anime and manga. And it also depends on the person too. You know, Vampire Knight, you know, if the person's a Twilight fan, then, you know, Vampire Knight would probably be the way to go. You know?
Yeah, I can see Vampire Knight bringing in a certain crowd anyway. But I was just thinking about it, and the show that I used to use to get people into shoujo was Hanayori Dango. And mm-hmm. I just clicked it into Amazon, and you can get one volume of it, the first volume, for $27.88. And
it's a deal.
Yeah. Steal. So I think it's three episodes on it.
Yeah, that's something I've ask a lot and I never get an answer. I have no idea if they still have the license to the anime or not, but I keep dreaming of a really cheap box set for that series, but I don't think it's ever going to happen. But
no, that, and to my more arty minded friends, yes, I've, you know, Utena, but that's such a unique thing that it's not like they watch that and then go, now I'm going to watch Marmalade Boy or something like that. So yeah, no, there's not a ton of gateway shows. I mean, I like Maid-sama. I think it's a cute little romantic comedy that's pretty well done. But I'm not sure I would hand it off to somebody who's just getting into anime. Like, now I'm just going to give them Redline.
Oh, yeah. You know. Oh, yeah, that's... Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, not a lot. I think when someone's getting into anime and they're the type that... Because it's a certain type that gets into it and then they want to vociferously consume everything in front of them. Yeah, then you start feeding them, like, Fruits Basket or whatever. But I never really got that into Fruits Basket. I mean, my girlfriend at the time, like, loved it. And I was okay with it, but I didn't, like, think it was the greatest thing ever. But a lot of people did, so there you go. So maybe that, Fruits Basket, you go back to that, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's probably still available in all the various box sets that keep releasing.
It's been re-released a lot.
Million so. Times, yeah.
Yeah, you can get the whole thing, not too bad. $35. Okay, so final question from same person, Kaigoro Niki. While there are quite a few women who create shonen manga, there do not seem to be many men who create shoujo manga. Other than Tezuka creating Princess Knight, I can't think of any male shoujo mangaka off the top of my head. I don't count artists like Kiyohiko Azuma since he doesn't write for shoujo publications. Is there a reason for this, like a social stigma against men writing girls' comics? Are there any male mangaka who may write shoujo manga under a female pseudonym? I think that's an interesting question, and I have no idea what the answer is.
Yeah, there've been a few historically. I don't know about too many of them right now. I know that the creator of Tsukeban Dekka, Wada Shinji, I think. Obviously male, he just passed away. So, did he pass away? I believe, yes, he did pass away just recently. I forget if the creator of Patario is also male. Oh,
I believe so.
Yeah.
I remember reading something about that.
Yeah, and I mean, people might not know this, but Leiji Matsumoto did a lot of shoujo before he called himself Leiji Matsumoto. Kazuo Omezu actually started off as a shoujo artist. I'm collecting a lot of his shoujo right now. It's actually quite mind blowing to see his horror turned into like really really like shoujo elementary school girl type shoujo characters totally getting freaked out by the horror stories that are in his very twisted dark mind. But I can't say of too many like really contemporary comic artists that are doing male comic artists that are doing shoujo right now.
The one that springs to my mind first is Tanaka Mecha, who does Faster Than a Kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pearl Pink, and Omokaides.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's... I love his work. I think.
Oh, I didn't even know it was a guy. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a guy. And he draws himself as a guy, and some of his little comics at the end of his books are pretty funny. He does not hide his identity, definitely. And I really wish that Faster Than a Kiss would be licensed. That's a shoujo series I'd love to see, but it does have the whole teacher-student angle, so I don't know. Fly here.
So it sounds like it's pretty rare, but is it a social thing, or what do you think it is? Dudes just don't. I mean, you could probably count the number of popular or recognizable male romance novel authors in America on one hand. So it's not like it's a super like common thing anywhere else in the world either.
Well, I think most mangaka, male or female, use pen names anyway, so mm-hmm. it's hard. It'd be hard to tell. And a lot of them are so reclusive, not allowing photos, even if they are female. That you know, there might be a whole contingent of male shoujo mangaka. We just don't know. they draw themselves as a you know a rabbit or something on the you know about the author page, and how are you supposed to know? So, same thing with you know. A romance novelist. I think I've seen a list somewhere of a lot of male romance novelists, but they all use female pen names, and perhaps they don't attend romance conventions or something. So I don't know. There might be. We just don't know for sure.
And I guess on the other hand, I mean, just you know, when it comes to the economics of working in manga, you know, a lot of you know established shoujo artists and josei artists. You know, when they have a chance to move over to a shonen or a seinen, they do because you know there are many more magazines and there are many more weekly magazines. You know there are more opportunities for them to earn a lot more and get a lot more recognition. Maybe have better adaptations of their works or more accessibility of adaptations of their works. So, you know that might be something else as well. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why so many female mangaka just start off doing shonen to begin with.
Right, yeah. This is one of those things where, like you're saying, you really can't tell because it's not like you can get an accurate survey of exactly how which of these people are which gender. I am 100% positive that females writing romance comics outnumber men writing romance comics by 10 to 1. But I'm sure there are plenty of guys making ends meet by writing romance comics because they're good at it. So, hey, who knows? All right. Well, that about wraps it up. That was a fun discussion. Thank you guys both so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Emily and Ed for showing up to chat. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. As always, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave us a little review or a star rating. We really appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and see you all next week.